Good morning, everyone. So the purpose of my presentation is to provide an overview of the performance of the region's housing markets over the last housing cycle. I'm going to focus my remarks this morning mostly on New York and New Jersey because comparable data for Puerto Rico are just not available. So let me give you a sense for what I'm going to talk about this morning. So in order to understand where we are now with respect to housing, it's important to provide some historical context. And so in order to do that, I'm going to focus the early part of my discussion on the housing boom and bust in the U.S. and how our region stacked up. And what I'll show you is that the housing cycle in the New York, northern New Jersey region was generally less severe, less volatile than it was nationally, especially when compared to some of the hardest hit places in the country. Sort of having documented the pattern of housing activity in the region, I'll spend a little bit of time thinking about how housing is connected to the performance of local economies. And what I'll show you is that despite the fact that the decline in housing has resulted in lost jobs and has provided a drag on economic activity generally, because our housing sector performed relatively well, the drag in our region has been less consequential than in other places. And then lastly, to wrap up, I'll spend a little bit of time focusing on the recent performance of the housing sector. And here I'll show that home prices across the board have started to stabilize, and home sales have actually started to rise in many places across the region, although because this last year has been marked with a lot of policy intervention, the future path of activity in the housing sector is highly uncertain at this point. Okay, so let me start off here by showing you a chart that plots out quarterly price changes over the past housing cycle. So this is an index that starts back in 1995. You can see a pretty sizable run-up up through about 2006 with a downturn in prices, and more recently through quarter two 2010. And this little dot at the very end is for July. That's the most recent month that we have available for house prices. You can see there's been a slight increase in prices. So it's useful to take a look at this overall trend and break this up down into some time periods. So that's what we do here. So you can see that while there was price increases up through 2000, starting in about 2000, the slope changed a bit, which means that prices started to increase a little bit more rapidly starting in about 2000, and up through 2006 rose pretty fast. In 2006, the beginning part of 2006, house prices nationally started to decline, and that decline went through 2008, where a leveling off started. So we marked the 2000 to 2006 period, and we call that the boom period. The 2006 to 2008 period we call the bust period. And then since then, we just have a more recent period that's been subject to some policy intervention and other housing market trends and patterns. So how does our region stack up? Well, there's two distinct experiences within the region. So I'll start off by showing you first what I'm going to call the Greater New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut region. This is an aggregate that includes downstate New York, Lower Hudson Valley, Long Island, in New York City, but it also includes Fairfield County and some of the metropolitan areas that are in northern New Jersey. Okay, and as an aggregate, this part of the district actually looked much more similar to the national pattern. During the boom period, you can see that house prices had a significant rise, actually more rapidly than the U.S. But during the bust period, while there was certainly a reversal and a sharp downturn in this part of the region, the price declines were not as steep as they were nationally. More recently, there has been some stabilization that's occurred, although prices have continued at a very low level to decline. The pattern is very, very different if you look at upstate New York. So that's what we'll do here. And so these are the upstate New York metros. So leading into the housing boom in upstate New York, you can see that there was actually no price appreciation at all. Now, during the boom period, upstate New York did enjoy some price increases, but not nearly at the level of the U.S. and in other parts of the country, even in the greater New York City area. Throughout this bust period, you can see that price increases continued upstate New York at a very low rate and have largely been stable throughout. So again, very different experiences depending on where you are in the region. Okay, another way to capture or to measure what's been going on in housing is to not look at price, but instead to focus on home sales. And so that's what I do in the next chart here. So what I'm plotting out here is an index of existing home sales for the U.S. And you can see that over this boom period, home sales increased at a pretty rapid clip as well. you can actually see that with respect to home sales, the turnaround, the reversal actually happened a little bit earlier in 2005. Home sales declined steadily through 2008, and in 2009, again, with some policy intervention here, most directly the home buyer tax credit, you can see that there's been a little volatility created, but overall the pattern is up, that sales activity is actually up over this period. So how about the various places in our region? So if you look at the greater New York City area, leading into the boom, the pace of home sales was pretty much matched the U.S. level, but during that boom period, sales activity in the greater New York City area was virtually flat. And you can actually see that home sales started to decline more or less on par with the nation and have recently rebounded in this area. In upstate New York, you see a similar picture. You don't see quite as much activity leading into the boom. And more or less, even though there's a little bit of jaggedness here, a relative stability throughout this entire period with a fairly sizable kick in sales activity at the very end in the more recent period. Okay, but again, if you look across our region relative to what's going on in the U.S., our region's marked by a lot more stability than in other parts of the country. Okay, one disadvantage of looking just at this measure is that it's only picking up existing home sales. So there's other parts of the country, and even in our region, where construction and new home sales activity is important, and this would miss that. So it's difficult. You can't actually get measures of new home sales at the regional level, but what you can measure is building permits. So we're going to take this as a correlate to what's going on in terms of new construction. You're going to see very, very similar pattern with respect to building activity as what you saw with just home sales activity generally. Over this boom period, you see in the U.S. a fairly sharp run-up in activity with a sizable decline through the bust and a little bit of a flattening out more recently. Picture is very similar when you look at the greater New York City area. Again, more or less matched the pace of growth in the period leading up to the boom. But during the boom period, it was relatively flat and even started to decline well before the housing downturn nationally. In more recent times, it started to level out. Looking at upstate New York, you can see that upstate New York, the dynamics are quite different. It's a region that is basically having population loss instead of growth, and so new home construction and buildings are less important in that region, and that's reflected in this index. It's a very low level of growth, and it, for the most part, it's been a decline over this full period. So relative to what's been going on in the rest of the country, building activity in our region has been at a much lower rate, much flatter. So what I focus on so far is single-family residences, but we know in New York City in particular that multifamily homes are very important. And Jason Bram later on is going to devote several slides to talking about some of the differences in New York City relative to other places in the district. But just to give you a sense, if you were to include, in addition to the single family, the multifamily homes into this type of an index, you can see that the growth has been much stronger in the greater New York City area when you include multifamily homes. You actually see growth more or less from 1995 all the way through the peak in housing in 2006. And with the exception of a spike in activity that corresponds to a change in the building code in New York City, there's been more or less a decline in activity since then, with a flattening out more recently. So what these charts do, hopefully, is give you a sense for some of the aggregate differences that are going on in the region. Of course, there's an adage in real estate, which is that all real estate is local, and that was certainly the case this time around in this current housing cycle. So to illustrate that, what I'm showing you here is the individual experience of about 380 different metropolitan areas across the entire United States. And what I'm plotting out is the average annual price change during those boom years on the horizontal axis here against the average annual price change during the bust period. And that's measured over here on the vertical axes. What you can see if you just look at this negative correlation is what that's going to suggest is that the places that experienced the most rapid run-up in prices also experienced the sharpest declines during the bust period. Okay, and it's useful, even though it's certainly true that each individual metropolitan area had its own unique experience, for purposes of thinking about how this might play out, it's useful to think about grouping these. And so what we're going to do is create some quadrants based on the experience relative to that overall U.S. Price index. So let me put that in. So this vertical bar here measures the average annual price change for the U.S. over the boom period, and that was at about 11%. The horizontal line measures the average annual price change during the bust period, and that's at about just a little under negative 10%. And using that to classify, we can create four different quadrants of metropolitan areas and group more similar experiences. So the first quadrant that we're going to identify here is what we're going to call the boom-bust quadrant. These are places that experienced more rapid price increases during the boom period, but also had sharper price declines in the bust period. And so these are very familiar places that tend to be, you know, symbols of the current housing cycle, places like Phoenix and Las Vegas and Bakersfield and Modesto, California. Just to put things in perspective, a place like Modesto, California, during the boom period was experiencing, on average, almost 17% price growth a year in their homes, but during the bust period experienced more than 25% price declines over that two-year period. So that gives you a sense for the kind of volatility in housing that was occurring in those types of markets. Okay, the second quadrant is what we'll call the overperformers. So these are metropolitan areas that during the housing boom actually experienced more rapid price increases, but during the bust did not have as severe a decline. Okay, and it turns out that almost all of the metropolitan areas that are in the greater New York City area, including northern New Jersey and out on Long Island, wind up falling in this bucket. Okay, so the next category that we're going to define is the relatively stable group. So the relatively stable group actually turns out to include most of the metropolitan areas in the entire United States, and in fact, all of the remaining metropolitan areas in the district, mostly the upstate metropolitan areas, fall into this relatively stable group. These are places that didn't really experience much of a housing boom, had kind of a modest housing boom during the boom years, but haven't actually had severe downturns in housing, and in some cases have actually continued to experience price increases during the bust period. Okay, and then the final quadrant that we'll classify here, these are the underperformers. These are places like Flint and Detroit that had weak economic conditions leading into the housing cycle, and as a result of the housing downturn, continued to have weak economic conditions. So these are places, if you were to take Detroit for example, Detroit only experienced about 3% a year growth during that boom period, well below what was going on nationally, but during the housing bust, actually experienced about 17% decline over that period. Okay, so very different experiences. The regions in our district tend to fall into the upper two quadrants. And in fact, there's actually quite a geographic pattern that emerges when you look at these different experiences on a map. So that's what I've done here. And perhaps not that surprisingly, you find that the boom-bust metros tend to cluster in the Sand States. So for example, in California, Nevada, Arizona, Florida, although there's a little bit of a sprinkling of these boom-bust metropolitan areas in the Boston-Washington corridor. On the other hand, the underperformers, they tend to be clustered more or less around Michigan. So these are economies that are tied into manufacturing and connected to auto that were weak going into the housing cycle. I think what the map does a really nice job of illustrating is the fact that most metropolitan areas, the vast majority of metropolitan areas, actually had a relatively stable experience over the housing cycle. And the overperformers tend to be clustered along the coasts. Okay, so what explains some of these pricing dynamics and why you see such different experiences across the country? Well, one factor that helps explain these patterns is the prevalence of non-prime loans. Okay, so non-prime loans, and what I'm grouping here are the two most common. So these are subprime loans and Alt-A loans. And in general, these loans are just a riskier type of loan than the standard prime loan. And the specific measure I'm using here is a penetration measure. So it's the number of these non-prime loans relative to the overall housing stock that's there. And it gives a sense for the penetration into these housing markets that this type of lending activity had. So one thing that jumps out here is if you look at the boom-bust quadrant that as a group, okay, and on average, this is the group that's the most volatile with the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, you can see that on average, the penetration of this type of loan was about twice the national rate. So it gives you a sense that there could be something going on here in terms of connecting non-prime loan penetration and home prices. Well, how does it look for our region? Well, focusing first on the metropolitan areas that are downstate in and around New York and in northern New Jersey, you can see that the penetration rate was about on par with the nation, in some cases a little bit above, in some cases a little bit below, but nowhere near, on average, what was going on in the boom-bust quadrant. Okay, and what about upstate New York, where performance was very stable, no boom, no bust, basically, in that quadrant? Well, if you look across the upstate New York metros, you can see that the penetration of this type of lending was actually very, very low. So if you were to just kind of look across the pattern here and think about what housing dynamics were going on, this gives you a strong sense that there's a connection between non-prime lending and the dynamics, especially the volatility created in house prices. So that's what we look at next, is try to document this. So first, focusing on the boom years, what I've plotted out here is the non-prime loan penetration at the peak of the housing market, 2006, relative to home price appreciation over that boom period. Okay, and what this positive relationship shows is that the places that had the deepest penetration of these types of risky loans also experienced the most rapid price increases over this period. And it's very likely that the direction of causation here is actually running in both directions. So that is that the penetration or the existence of these non-prime loans actually contributed to the run-up in prices, but at the same time, the run-up in prices fed back and contributed to more non-prime loans being made. And it's, in fact, very likely that these two forces were actually self-reinforcing. Nonetheless, you can see there is a positive, strong relationship here. What about the bust period? Well, during the bust period, we see a similar type of relationship, but just in reverse. So what this shows is that the places that experienced the deepest penetration of this type of lending at the peak actually experienced the sharpest declines during that bust period for similar reasons and similar dynamics. Okay, so there's a connection between housing performance and local economic activity. So we think that the performance of housing markets is going to affect the amount of activity in a local economy, but it's also true that there's going to be a feedback effect, and local economic performance will feed back onto housing performance. So with respect to how we might think about how housing can flow into and affect local economic conditions, we think there might be two different channels operating. So one is a direct channel, where the decline in housing activity reduces employment, for example, in the construction sector. When you get a lower amount of housing activity occurring, there's just less construction activity occurring. That's a direct effect. In addition, when there's a reduction in housing activity, there could be a reduction in the sales activity for consumer durables that are tied into housing. So when people buy a new home, maybe they replace their appliances. So in general, we think because of this direct effect, we should see some relationship between the volatility in housing and the performance of local economies. But beyond just this direct effect, there's also an indirect effect. Okay, the reduction in the value of the housing asset is also, we expect it to be, reducing consumer spending. And this could happen for a variety of reasons. So for example, there's an effect called a wealth effect that economists think about, where the reduction in this very important asset on the household balance sheet just makes people feel poorer. And as a result, they spend less. But beyond that, if the value of the housing asset falls enough, where you actually get into situations of having negative equity, where the mortgage is actually at a higher value than the value of the home itself, that can put you in situations where there's no longer equity to tap into to fuel consumer spending, and potentially put you in a stressed situation where you can't refinance. And because of that, and because of the effect on the household balance sheet, we also would expect that the decline in the value of the housing asset to be related to a reduction in consumer spending as well. So what I'm going to try to do now is to give you a sense for, some sense for these different effects into local economies. So let me start with the most direct effect, which is to look at construction employment. So what I'm showing you in this chart is over the past 10 years, the share of employment in construction for the U.S. And you can see that back in 2000, it was about 5.5%. During the housing boom, the share of employment devoted to this sector increased, as you'd expect, and has fallen relatively sharply since. But how does that stack up compared to the metropolitan areas that are in that highly volatile group, the boom-bust metropolitan areas? Well, if you were to look at that boom-bust group, again, across the U.S. As an aggregate, the first thing you see is that as early as 2000, before that housing boom really started, construction was a much more important part of these economies than it was in the U.S. overall. And during the housing boom, you see that there was a fairly sharp rise in the share of activity devoted to construction. Okay, when the housing market then reversed and declined, you can see that there was a sharp drop in the share of activity that was actually devoted to construction in these regions. And in fact, if you were to, instead of thinking this in terms of share, think about it in terms of just jobs, this decline in activity for these metropolitan areas actually represents about a 44% decline in construction jobs. It's a very sharp decline. How does that compare to what was going on in the U.S. nationally? Well, over the same period for the U.S., it was only about a 25% decline. Just for comparability, if you were to look at the relatively stable group, didn't really experience a huge boom bust, you can see that that follows much more similar to what was going on in the U.S., didn't have quite the run-up that was experienced even in the U.S., also since then hasn't had quite the decline. And if you were to translate this decline in shares to what it means for jobs, in the relatively stable group, you can see that decline in construction was only about 20%, so less than half of what was going on in that boom-bust group. And how about our own district? What's going on here? Well, here you can see that because of some of the demographics, we're a much more mature region. Our economies tend to be less dependent on construction activity, and you can see that going back as early as 2000, that only about 4%, a little less than 4% of the overall economy was tied into construction activity. And throughout this entire time period, for the most part, it was pretty stable. It increased a little bit, just about over 4%, and then more recently has seen a decline. And over this period of 2006 to the most recent August 2010, for our district, it's only turned into about a 14% decline in jobs. So this hopefully gives a sense that there's a connection between housing activity and employment. And you can actually see this much more generally as well. Instead of just focusing on construction employment, what about total employment? So what I'm plotting out here is average growth in jobs over the boom period, according to those quadrants, okay, across those quadrants. And what you can see is that during the boom period, the metropolitan areas that experienced the most rapid employment growth were also the ones that experienced the most rapid price increases, the boom bust and the overperformers. The relatively stable group basically tracked U.S. Activity. And the underperforming group, which is a group that had weak local economic conditions even before the housing cycle, you can see was having negative job growth even, you know, throughout this entire period. During the bust period of 2006 to 2008, on the other hand, you can see a very different pattern emerge. The places that actually had this contraction in housing, the boom bust and the underperformers, actually experienced the worst job performance. The overperforming group was relatively stable throughout this period in terms of job performance. And the relatively stable group actually increased by a little bit the overall job growth that was occurring. So again, this gives a sense, this is sort of summarizing all the different factors that connect housing into the local economies. Okay, now what about thinking a little bit about that indirect effect? Well, it's very difficult to measure exactly the decline in the housing value and how that would connect into consumer spending. So instead, I'm focusing on just sort of one extreme of having a reduction in housing value, which is those homes that actually enter into a negative equity situation. So these are mortgages that are actually valued at a higher level than the house itself is worth, okay? So what you can see here is in places like Las Vegas, you've actually got three-quarters of all the homes that are actually underwater. Places like Modesto and Phoenix and Miami and Detroit, places where there's significant distress in housing, you're seeing rates that are about twice the U.S. rate, okay? So this is clearly showing that there's been a significant decline in the value of the housing asset. And a number of these houses are also distressed and can no longer tap into any equity, probably have problems refinancing as well. Well, how does it stack up for our region? How does our region look? Well, if you were to look across the downstate area, you can see that there is pockets of activity here in terms of negative equity, but nothing even approaching the U.S. level. And in upstate New York, you can see that this issue is a very small one. So what about distressed homeowners and delinquency? So what I'm showing you here is a credit conditions map, and all of this information is actually available on the New York Fed's website. This and many other data are available, capturing different dimensions of the housing market. And what you can see is, and hopefully this pattern isn't too surprising at this point, that a lot of the real activity in terms of severe delinquency, 90-plus days delinquent, is occurring in those areas that are the boom-bust out on the coasts and in the sand states. And if you were to look at our region, our district, relative to the country, overall it looks like it's performing relatively well, although there are some pockets of activity. Here, anything in red is above average, anything in blue is below average, and that same set of conditions applies to this chart where I'm just showing conditions within the district now. So if you were to take a place like Ithaca, it's actually one of the top performing areas, Tompkins County. Very, very low levels of mortgage delinquency. In our region, where the real pockets of distress seem to be is in and around New York City. If you look at Sullivan in Orange County in the lower Hudson Valley, in New Jersey, Essex and Hudson County stand out as being pockets of distress, and out on Long Island as well. Okay, now turning to what's going on more recently, focusing first on prices. And this is over the last year when there's been some policy intervention occurring. You can see that prices have generally increased in the U.S. at a rate of about 2.4%. Within the district, you can see there are some places that are experiencing price increases, Buffalo leading the pack with a 3.6% rate, and Rochester and Syracuse at 1.1. These three metropolitan areas have tended to be overperformers, strong performers throughout the entire downturn and since. But there are also places in the district that are continuing to experience price declines, and in particular, the metropolitan areas in northern New Jersey and Poughkeepsie are seeing fairly significant price declines in the more recent period. In terms of home sales activity, you can see a very different picture here. The U.S. experienced growth of about 12% over the past year, and almost across the board in the district, you're seeing more rapid growth, with some places like Buffalo, Poughkeepsie, and Long Island experiencing growth that's almost three times as high as the national rate. So on average, across the board in the district, we're seeing increases in home sales activity. Okay, and just to wrap up, so the housing boom and bust cycle that was experienced in our part of the country has been less severe than nationally. The decline in housing sector has resulted in lost jobs and has provided a drag on economic performance, but because of our relatively strong performance in housing, the drag has been less consequential here than in other places. And most recently, prices have started to stabilize and home sales have risen across the region, although the future path of housing activity is highly uncertain. And it's largely because over this last period, there has been various policy interventions such as the home buyer's tax credit, mortgage modification efforts, and foreclosure mitigation efforts. And how this will all play out is largely going to depend on how those different policy actions play out as well.